What's up?
How's it going?
You're supposed to do it back.
Oh, sorry. What's up?
Thank you. But now it's worthless. But anyway, we tried.
Have you been watching old commercials, or did you get to that episode in Letterkenny?
No, I didn't do either of those things. I was just thinking about how...
You sent me a Letterkenny gift the other day, and I wanted to pretend for a minute that you were actually working your way through the series.
Oh, yeah, no, I was a fake Letterkenny fan. I was just doing that to, because I knew it would appeal to your brand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Give it an old signal boost, as they call it on the internet.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a while. Like that song mm-hmm. from that one guy with the eyebrow ring.
Yes. So I keep saying so. I don't know why I'm doing that. Just to
like you have some sort of transition to get to.
Yeah,
you have a different topic you want to address.
Yeah, we have to introduce our band or whatever. I don't know. We just it's been a while since we have talked. Mm-hmm. And you know, we just thought we would do a no topic episode this time because we're both incredibly busy.
Yeah, the world has turned and. Everything's upside down and, you know, life comes at you fast, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I don't know, other improperly used metaphors and stuff, but, it's been a couple of weeks, man. It's been some serious weakages.
Yes. Yes. One might say weakness. But anyway, you, have some dramatic, career news.
I'm not sure how dramatic it is. If you've been following the arc of my life, which nobody has except me because it's just me and nobody else would find it interesting. the company that I did a whole lot of freelance work for years, Sandwich, formerly Sandwich Video, now just Sandwich, is now my full-time employer, which is cool.
Yeah. And?
And...
And Dan what? Is a visual and effects what? Supervisor now.
Oh, sure. Yes. Given that this is a small team of people, we sort of just get, I don't know, not arbitrary titles, but, you know, our titles are not as strict as they are in the film industry. Yes, but my title is visual effects supervisor, which is it's just not the same thing as the visual effects supervisor you see on your favorite movie. But sure, it's close enough. We'll call it that.
Yeah, I mean... There's some title inflation, I think, that's happening there.
Yeah.
But, I also got a promotion as well, so I'm a comp supervisor now. But
hooray!
You outrank supervisor. Me.
I don't outrank you.
You outrank me. It's like a... But, you know, I mean, it is kind of like I'm, you know, in the French... A Commodore in the French Navy, and then you are, like, an admiral in Trinidad and Tobago's Navy.
Sure,
so it's,
yeah.
it's a little different.
We're just really throwing our metaphors around.
Yeah.
No, I think it's actually an apt comparison in as much as, I have the higher title and I ask you all of the things that I should know. And then I just use those answers as my own. Mm-hmm. Cause that's how most businesses work. The smart person has to report to somebody who's dumber, basically.
It's like, I'm a Stack Overflow. You just copy and paste the answer you need. And go on.
More or less.
Yeah.
And then I just delete the last line, which always says, or you could pre-comp it.
Yeah. Oh, man. One of these days, I'm going to get you to pre-comp something, and you're going to thank me.
You would be so proud of what we are doing currently.
Are you using a render farm instead of just rendering on your local machine?
No. Well, I haven't sorted that out yet because I haven't found the correct technical solution for it, though. But there are... so many shots, and within those shots, so many green screen plates per shot that we just developed a system whereby all of the green screen plates are going into live groups so they can be pre-comped separately from the main comps. And it's working really well so far. But I think I literally typed at one point, Joe would just be like shaking his head and smiling if he saw what we were doing right now, like, blah, 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 use a live group. It's so great. It's like a group alive, etc.
Yeah, I think maybe a year and a half to 2 years worth of material about that, of me trying to talk to you about doing that and trying to explain every single time what it is.
I wish we had more time to like really get into this while we were developing it, because it's a great system, except for the fact that the live input node doesn't work on any of the pre-comps, so we have to have the plate inside the live group also. But it's fine. It works for what it's doing right now.
Okay. Yeah.
It just straight up doesn't work. The live group outputs correctly, but in the live group, you can't see anything. It doesn't matter, though.
Well, if you want to get really crazy, you can do some stuff with the join views node, where you set up each of your plates to be a view as if it was a stereo comp.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And then you can toggle between all of those so that you can batch the entire thing.
Oh, you've mentioned this before. Mm-hmm. So piping multiple plates into a single live group via the views thing?
No. I'm not talking about a live group. Just in your comp, you can have a join views that basically acts as a switch so that you can toggle between the different views of whatever is nearly identical and treat it as if it was a stereo comp, where anything you need to do just to one plate, you can, you know, use the stereo controls to say just this view or one view or whatever, and
it seems
do that
needlessly
logic.
Complex and fairly opaque, frankly.
Well, it's actually pretty fast as long as what you're doing is mostly the same. If what you're doing is different between the things, then you're going to wind up recreating all of the stuff you're doing anyways, and it doesn't save you any time. So don't use it on stuff that's not exactly like same as shot. For listeners who are confused about what a same-as shot is, same-as shot is basically when you have a shot, and then you have another shot, and they're basically the same. And usually, that's because they're part of the same take. They just are cut with other shots in between, but you're not worrying about the other shots. You're just working on the same-as shots.
Yeah.
Because they need to be
the
same.
That would work for this, because for a lot of it, because there's like a wide and a medium of just, you know, 20 different people standing on a green screen.
Yeah, so what I would do is I would have all the wides together and all the mediums together.
Well, what we did was I made a basic keying tool set, turned it into a live group, and saved it as a tool set, and then just plopped that into every master comp. And we used a fun little expression, which made me again think of I'm not allowed to reveal the things that you did at your former jobs. That you click the publish button and it automatically puts the right name in the right place and just does it, so you don't have to spend way too much time doing that kind of junk. But we found some surprisingly clever automations to make this gigantic mountain of work seem only like a slightly large mountain of work.
Okay, but is it like the XKCD thing where it's like we've spent all this time automating this stuff and we have, you know, not saved any time?
It's very near that, not quite, because again, the majority of the work is going to happen after the keys. It was just like, there's so much to do, I can't even bother thinking about how to key these green screens. I need to hand that off. And the only real sane way to do that was to just push all the keys into live groups, which, you know, it worked.
Yep.
So far. I mean, we're just getting into it, but it's, and the other thing is, of course, our Dropbox issue and file paths and stuff, but I made a tweet about that. Nobody cares about it, so I won't even rehash it here.
Why
do we use Dropbox?
Why do you do this? Where you put all this stuff in Dropbox and everybody has different Dropbox paths.
Yeah, but at a certain point, everyone's Dropbox path lines up because we're all working out of a shared folder. It's just the first half of the path that needs to be turned into some periods and slashes, and then everything links just fine.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
Okay.
And if it doesn't work, we made a thing. You click the button, and it makes the stuff work.
Have you thought about making a symlink on everybody's machine so that everybody has the same file path to start with?
I have thought of that, but no. It's funny, I can't even remember what I told you at this point because my brain is absolute applesauce these days, but... I emailed the Foundry about the whole relative file pass thing, and I was like, hey, is Nuke Studio, when it builds all my comps automatically, which is very helpful, it doesn't have a relative file pass button, and I kind of need that for, you know, sharing over Dropbox. And the guy wrote us like a big, long, like 350-line-long Python script to do it, and I ran it, and it broke. It just didn't do anything right. It put a period in front of every file path instead of a slash, and it's like, well, that's not how relative file paths work, but thank you for the effort, which I'll go back and try and tweak at some point. But, yeah, the little automating it in a Nuke Studio is not something I know how to do very well, or anybody does, because Nuke Studio is a pain in the ass. But making, you know, six lines of Python or whatever do it in Nuke was surprisingly easy, and we just again saved it as a tool set because we're lazy.
It's just, I don't know, there's a part of me that just gets very antsy about the
I promised you there was an A to B to C discussion that actually led us to the solution.
Okay.
It wasn't just like, what if you try that? But, you know, one of these days I will, by hook or by crook, convince you to come work with me and help us develop a process flow that actually works correctly.
Okay, but I want to be Admiral too.
Okay, you can be Admiral also.
but the co-admirals. No, it's a... That's how that works.
Is there an example from Star Trek that we can use in terms of ranks and things?
No, not really. I mean, they just have naval
rankings. They have multiple admirals though.
Yeah, I mean, just like the Navy, you have multiple admirals, so you don't just have one admiral.
Well, I mean, in this instance, we only have the one admiral just because there's not very many people here. We don't have much of a fleet either.
Yes, but, you know, you have the finest dinghies that anybody's ever seen.
Exactly.
Sorry, Austin. You're not a dinghy.
He's not a... No. He's a very useful tugboat? I don't know. We're really straining the use of metaphor.
Right.
I don't know about you, but I'm entirely too tired to come up with correct metaphors at this point.
No, I'm beat, too. Because the supervising thing, I have not automated a single thing, but I have been in meetings, so you can do that. That's a thing that's possible.
Yeah, I don't do meetings drain you of your life force in the same way they do to me?
I'm not sure, because I've never heard you describe how you feel about meetings, because you usually don't talk about them.
Well, here's a question for you. Do I sound any different today? Because I feel like I do.
You sound extremely tired, and not just like usual Dan tired, but like depleted.
So yeah. Here's the thing. When I talk for more than probably an hour a day or something, I don't have any sort of classical actor training. I don't know how to speak from my diaphragm. I speak directly from my throat. So I feel like I started losing my voice at like 4:30 every single day. Especially if I have a couple of meetings, which is another thing. I feel like I'm going very John Roderick. When my voice gets like this, I sound like my dad, and it really freaks me out. Because I guess that's just old man voice. I don't talk like this like John Roderick's dad, but you know, I feel like I'm getting there.
Oh man. You do sound a little hoarse. I
just a Shetland maybe.
If I talk for a while, usually after we're done recording this podcast, I need some water. But I don't usually have that in meetings that I'm in. I'm usually there, I guess,
to listen and like put your hands on your face and just shake your head sadly.
No, I'm not gonna say that. But I am there to listen and then occasionally comment. But it's just the act of being inside the meeting to listen and then occasionally comment. Somehow it just drains me, and I feel like a zombie afterwards. And it's like, it's because my attention was so focused on that thing. And I find it very difficult to multitask on anything else. If anybody's like trying to describe something and I like click over to another window to check on a render or something like that, and then forget about it. I didn't hear what you said.
Yeah, I think the trying to do things at once, a couple things at the same time, or even just oscillating back and forth quickly, it has a weird exponential effect, such that like if it would normally take one unit of energy, if I toggle between four things at the same time, it's suddenly 16 units of energy. And now I want to go lay down because I don't even know what day it is. Honest to God, I have no idea what day it is most of the time. It's not very helpful.
No, that's not helpful at all. I don't know.
Welcome to the Overworked Podcast.
Yes. Welcome to burnout.
It's not even burnout. It's very weird because, it's probably some symptom of burnout, but you know, we have very, broken relationships with burnout because we're millennials and we were brought up to think that burnout was the correct way to work. Mm-hmm. but I very much enjoy the things I'm doing. I just realized that that there's 10 pounds of work day in a 5-pound work day sack.
Yeah. I have also realized that too, which is different from it when you are solely responsible for the work getting done and not responsible for any other aspect of what's happening. Like if you open up your comp and you got your stuff and you work on your stuff and you put it out and you wait for notes, like that is a different kind of work day than what you do when you're also supervising, where you need to check in on where things are, what's mm-hmm. happening with deliveries, what is going on in terms of what's in other departments that's supposed to be coming back to you. And you're just like, I don't want to think about any of this stuff. There's so much to think about.
Can you write a script that just sends a message to people like every 45 minutes and said, where are we at on that thing?
I could, but that doesn't seem like anything anybody should do. Because I would also be very upset if someone did that to me. But yeah,
well, you gotta randomize it so people can't tell that you're doing it automatically.
Oh right, just 45 minutes plus or take a couple minutes.
Yeah, plus or minus like 7 minutes or something. So it's just kind of randomized.
Yeah,
I can do that. I can do that with Keyboard Maestro.
Dan, I'm not sure automating more things is solving your problems at the moment.
You don't know.
By the end of your project, they check out on you and just like, look at all this stuff I made. It automates all these plates.
I think it did occur to me when I was adding all of the live groups to all the plates and the input wasn't working. So I basically had to publish, make editable, show, paste in the plate, add a switch, connect it, and then publish it again. When I was doing that, part of me did think, you know, I could really record these mouse clicks. And then just hit play and let it do the thing. And then like take a nap for, you know, 20 minutes. It probably would break everything and make everything way worse. But I did think about it for a second.
Mm, yeah. Man, I don't know. And I shouldn't say this like I'm complaining, because like you, I am happy to have my position as like the Commodore in the French Navy or whatever.
Yeah, you got your bossy pants on. Everyone loves the bossy pants.
Yeah, it's just... I need to calibrate what's going on to this new level of responsibility and mental activity, which is different.
The oscillation between hands-on artist work and high-level sort of managerial type stuff, there's a switch that happens in your brain there that is very difficult to flip sometimes, depending on, like, you know, changing gears for me, that's a difficult thing to do, to go like from a comp 1 second to a Zoom chat the next, and then managing files and stuff like my brain is not built that way.
Oh yeah, no. I have some transitional time that I need for every task whenever I pivot from one thing to another.
You take your little walks or whatever. I went outside at like, it was like 5:30. I was like, I'm going to go outside and see the sun for 5 minutes before it goes away. And I never saw it today. And I felt very Joe. I'm like, I wish I'm in my backyard. I wish I could walk around and take a picture of a plant or something.
Just, you feel like you got some creative thing done today.
No, I went outside. I got bit by a mosquito, and I watched a bunch of ants climb the wall, because it's still mosquito season here, and they are so tiny. They are absolutely minuscule that you cannot see them unless they are like 3 inches from your face, and it makes me so angry. I am so covered in mosquito bites. It drives me insane.
Wow. That sucks.
I hate it. I hate it. I hate it so much. I want them all to die.
Well, you know, there are companies that'll come by and treat your house with a lot of toxic chemicals to do that.
Spray down the entire neighborhood.
Yeah, well, they don't spray down the entire neighborhood, but they have companies where they're like, oh, we'll put some thingies in your, you know, lawn or whatever, and it's like any place where they might potentially grow their little larva and hatch and destroy you. You can kind of get rid of that. But anyway, I'm glad you saw the sun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That sounds it was sad.
It was nice. Yeah, it was all right. I went outside for a little while.
Yeah, I have to say, I see the sun, no problem, during my workday, because it's on the other side of this window that's behind my monitor. But
sure. I love the window as well, but, you know, mm-hmm. you can't keep that open all day. Well, I can't, because it will bake me alive in my office.
Yeah, yeah. It's just that I usually go on like a little walk around lunchtime around the neighborhood. Not because I love my neighborhood, but because
so you can report everyone to next door.
Yes. No. So I can put all the graffiti in the 311 app. I just wander around just to stretch my legs and like have some sort of form of like circulation. Because I feel like that's
nice.
It's probably a good idea.
You're gonna start wearing those compression socks.
No. But I
my mom loves those compression socks on airplanes. You got to get the compression socks. You don't want a blood clot.
Isn't that only if like you have very specific kind of circulation issues?
I don't know. All I remember is that there was an argument because she kept trying to talk me and Amanda into wearing compression socks on the flights overseas because it was a long flight and she didn't want us to get blood clots. I was like, we're in our early 30s. It's fine. We'll be okay, I think.
Well, you know, mothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did mean well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can send you some compression socks if you want to try them out.
No, thank you. but yeah, that's about it. And I guess we could talk about not just like work stuff. We could talk about fun stuff. Like,
I was going to say, do you want to make this like episode 4 in our like 4-part series of non-movie episodes about Florida?
Oh, I wasn't going to. I was going to talk about the Apple event because I figured you were excited.
Oh, sure. We can talk about technology. Technology is a thing people care about.
But the short version is I went to Florida again and
and ate a Cuban sandwich. Yeah.
Moving on. So the Apple event, Dan, as someone who is too busy to watch it and has only seen like brief summary recaps, could you explain to me the good parts?
Oh, you were too busy to watch it? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had it on kind of in the background while I was doing some stuff. So the good parts, there's an iPad mini that looks like the Pro and has a pencil.
No. I said good parts.
Oh, okay. Sure. Well, people seemed excited about it. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm just kidding.
Let's see. The watch has more screen.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
And it's green also.
Yeah.
And then the phone... It has bigger cameras and newer cameras and 120 hertz refresh, and it's very cinematic.
Yeah.
Oh, and the notch is slightly less wide and slightly taller.
So, cinematic mode.
Yeah. Just go right for the jugular on that one.
I know. Yeah. Would you care to explain that one for me?
Sure. They're using what I assume is their autofocus machine learning technology, which basically just looks for face shapes for focus stuff, and applying that to a video mode such that when people turn away from the camera or turn toward the camera, the computer will rack focus between them using portrait mode technology. Everyone's favorite flawless fake depth of field technology. You almost made it through without the sigh. And then not only to mention that it's portrait mode defocus technology, it's also 1080p at 30 frames a second, which is bad.
Yeah. I saw your buddy, Stu Mashwitz, aka Pro Lost, tweeting that it may be up to 30, not just 30, because he...
Yeah, if we recall from the days when they first added 1080p to the iPhone, I believe they originally added it at 1080p 30, and everyone was like, what the hell is this? This is stupid. We want 24. And Apple's like, no, 30 is more. It's better. And then like at some dot release, like 8 months later, they're like, fine, you can have 24 now. So I assume that's going to happen as well. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there would be any underlying technology about the focus changing or portrait mode-ness of it all that would require it to be 30 frames a second. Like, it doesn't need to be divisible by... Well, 24 is divisible by 120, isn't it? I can't do math.
Yeah, oh, Dan, I can't. It's too late. You're hurting my head.
it's 5 instead of 120 divided by 34. So there you go. Yeah, they're both divisible by 120. So if it's a refresh rate thing, this shouldn't be a problem.
I mean, my guess would maybe be that they want it to look as smooth as possible for whatever it is they're doing with the focusing, or that their focusing garbage needs a certain amount of frame data in order to do it reliably, I guess. But that doesn't really make any sense because it can do it on a still. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I
assume they'll add 24 at some point here, or Filmic Pro will announce that they're adding it to their app, and then 2 years later, just like quietly take that off the website.
Sure. But I don't. It kind of disappoints me that they wasted the name Cinematic Mode on this.
When they said cinematic mode, or I don't even know if I was listening at that point, I may have seen the word cinematic mode go by on Twitter. I assumed it was a video playback mode, not an actual capture mode. What came to your mind? What would not have been a waste to use the word cinematic mode for?
Well, I wouldn't have used cinematic as a descriptor at all, because it's so vague and encompasses so many different things that,
I mean, people don't know what rack focus, like regular people don't know what rack focus means.
No, but you could say it was shallow focus. I mean, you should describe what it is, because if you ever add any other thing that's supposed to be like cinematic or supposed to be like film, because cinematic just means like the cinema, like film. It's kind of a useless descriptor, because there are a lot of films that are shot like garbage. And it doesn't mean you want your thing to look like garbage, and it doesn't mean that if you don't have shallow depth of field that what you're making is bad, because that's not true either. There's so many films where it's like, well, you shot the whole thing on a wide angle lens and everything's in focus. Like, mm-hmm. it can be whatever you want. It should just be whatever the artistic expression is that you're looking for.
Yeah, I wonder if the conversation originated in the discussion about what makes something cinematic, and talking particularly about sensor size and trying to emulate a larger sensor than is in the phone. And basically what that boiled down to in terms of features they could deliver is shallow depth of field, which is a byproduct of a larger sensor, but not necessarily the main feature.
Right. And like I just said, it is not always the desirable outcome that you want to have happen anyways.
Yeah, I saw you can pick focus later, mm-hmm. as well. You can adjust in the same way that you can adjust like the slow-mo clips. You can change your focus stuff later. Can you change the depth of field? You can do that in portrait mode, right? So I assume you can do that here.
Yeah, you can adjust the phony baloney aperture. But, you know, there is still no tool for telling the machine learning that's so smart that someone's hair is on the background, or some piece of the background is on someone's ear or between their glasses and their face.
The cameras on the original, the regular iPhone are now in a diagonal orientation, which means they have both horizontal and vertical disparity. So theoretically it'll be solved by now, right? That extra couple of millimeters is really going to make the disparity depth map way clearer.
No, I don't think it will. And I would like to be clear. I'm not poo-pooing the idea of doing fake depth of field. Part of my job and part of Dan's job is to do fake depth of field on things.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm doing so much of that right now. You'd be so sad if you saw what I was doing.
okay. But
there's so much fake depth.
But the point is, we have to fake depth of field on some stuff. So I don't have a problem with faking things. I have a problem with it looking like butt, and with it having like no control or artistic control where you can decide, oh, hey, you know what? That's not where I wanted that to be. Or as I jokingly suggested to our internet buddy, Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, Todd Vaziri, that it would be nice if you could do like a little split diopter. With this sort of thing, because it's all fake anyways, who cares? Just have both of them in focus and then a big bunch of blurry stuff everywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, you could just like use the video, like make another copy of the video and change the focus, and then just, you know, crop one and put it on top of the other.
Yeah, just split screen everything. I just, mm-hmm. I don't know. I want to see people do creative things with the stuff that's announced. I don't feel like calling it cinematic mode sets it up for success as much as it sets it up for mockery. And it's mainly because it doesn't explain what it does. It doesn't correlate to any specific... It doesn't leave any room for any specific artistic action for you to perform other than picking where the focus is.
Yeah, which is something you could kind of technically do before if you like tap live on your video and change the autofocus while it was rolling. But I do like that you can change it in post. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, but it's not really... when you change it in post, it's not changing your focus in post. It is changing where the fake focus effects are.
Right. Right. So you kind of need everything to be in focus from the get-go.
Right. Which is not as much of a problem when you have a tiny little sensor. So
and an extremely wide angle lens.
Yes. But the but it does get a little tricky. Let's say if you have ever noticed, if you put your iPhone close up to something like a flower or a pencil in your pencil jar on your desk or whatever, and you have it focus on that, the background will be out of focus, not because of portrait mode, but because
that's how light works.
That's how light works. That's what the lens is doing. So if you were to try to use cinematic mode in a way where the background is actually out of focus already and you're trying to get it into focus, you ain't gonna. And if you will have something that's super sharp, you can always make it blurrier. So that's you know,
yeah,
just something to consider. I don't know. I just want people to be successful with whatever it is that they shoot, because I don't want to see on Instagram.
Want people to be happy.
Yeah, I just want people to be happy, and but not just happy, but to make something that is good. So when I see it on Instagram in their Instagram story or their you know on the grid or whatever, and it's some out of focus broken thing, I don't want to see that. I want you to be set up for success. I want you to look at it and go like, wow, that's exactly what I wanted. It looks just like if I had shot this on an Arri Alexa. But it won't. But you know, you can, whatever. It doesn't matter.
I joked about it, but I do think moving the secondary camera to be diagonally offset will at least make your artifacting equal in both vertical and horizontal ways. You know, in the way that anyone's taken a portrait photo of vertical or horizontal lines and then rotated their phone 90 degrees and saw that it broke in different ways. At least now that they will both break evenly. So maybe now it just looks like weird, consistent, broken depth of field. I mean, that was a smart technical move on their point, but like it's still got to be broken.
Yeah. And another point about cinematic, the place I most often see it used or misused is when people are discussing LUT packs and LUTs that you can download. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. Is that part of cinematic mode? Because there was something in there about filters that you can adjust and save. Did they just change the like pre-built photos filters to like be like more like the portrait mode, lighting mode things and give them fancy names? Or is it like you can customize those and like load them into the phone and save them later? Were they like saveable presets, or is it just like we gave them funny names now?
I don't know, because I didn't watch it. So you have to tell me.
Well, there was something in there about filters, and it's like, basically they were describing LUTs that you can apply to things live. But I couldn't tell if they were like, you can customize the look yourself and basically save that as like a custom LUT to your video that you like to use a lot, or if it's just like they renamed and kind of made more complex filters that you can put on your camera or something. Yeah. I didn't bother to look into that. I saw cinematic mode and then I saw ProRes 4K 30 and just I had enough of that.
Dan, don't you want ProRes 4K 30?
I've had so many people, including dear friend of the show who is host of another podcast who shoots a lot of things on his iPhone, say, yeah, ProRes would be great on my phone. I was like, really? Would ProRes really be great? Like, I wish my phone would play back ProRes.
Yeah.
For certain things, because sometimes I want to look at a shot that's in my Dropbox and I don't want to walk all the way over to my iMac and sit down and watch it. And I just want to download it from my Dropbox. And the Photos app will be like, this file can't play on your phone. And I was like, well, you made the software and the phone. So just like add ProRes support to the Photos app, which is fine. But the idea of shooting 4K 30p ProRes on my, and I assume it's base ProRes, maybe even ProRes LT or proxy, but why in God's name do you want that level, like 220 megabits a second video on a telephone?
Yeah, and they didn't announce anything like log or anything, did they?
No. I mean, again, ProRes is great for, I don't know if you want to call it an intermediate codec. It's actually a mastering codec, depending on which version you use. It's a great codec for editing and for color grading and stuff, but the point of it is not any, there's nothing I would want to do with it on a phone. Like, I'm not going to be color grading on my phone, because that's just silly. And I'm not going to be editing on my phone, and I don't, where I care about, like, H.264 GOP intra-frame compression crap. Like, I'm not going to do that on my phone. There are so many limitations already. It feels like this was a, well, we can do this, so let's just throw it in the thing and call it a feature, and nobody will ever use it.
Yeah, I mean, like I just said, I feel like a better use of the appeal to a professional would be to have something where you can shoot flat and log and then be able to grade it later, as opposed to shooting in ProRes.
Yeah, because they're kind of there with photos with the raw stuff, right? Like, that's kind of the same concept as what you're talking about. They don't have that for video yet.
No, well, I mean, it's not exactly the same. Raw does capture more data. With log, you're not capturing more data. You're squeezing more data into a container. Mm.
Sure.
So, because it does it logarithmically. So all the really, really super important stuff, the human eye differentiates between things that are on the darker side more than it can differentiate things that are on the brighter side. So your log curves for the various log formats all favor having a bunch of information that'll eventually be the shadows. And it'll look really lifted when you look at it, and very flat and kind of whitish. But that's not an error. That's just preserving as much of that info inside of the container in the bucket that you have for it, as opposed to doing everything linearly, where you would not be able to store as much data in there.
I'm sorry, some real-time follow-up. I was just trying to figure out what flavor of ProRes they're actually recording on the phone, and apparently it is unknown. They haven't specified, so maybe there's a specific ProRes compression they're using for the phone instead of the ones that we have on the Mac. But this says you can record ProRes at 1080p30 with the 128GB phone and 4K30 with the 256, 512, and 1TB storage options. So at least they know that if you give 4K30 ProRes to some dingus with a 128GB phone, they are going to fill up their phone in like 30 seconds and then be like, well, what the hell?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to find out what the actual failure mode is when you max out your recording while you're out your storage while you're recording video.
Here's another reason why I'm not going to do this, because I've used Filmic Pro to film on a phone before, and for a long time Filmic Pro had higher bandwidth recording options than the camera app would, so you would go to that if you wanted some higher quality stuff. I tried doing like a behind the scenes documentary style interview thing where we were just sort of doing a post-mortem for a video, and we thought it'd be fun to do a behind the scenes video. We filled up the phone so fast and had to plug it into a laptop and dump it because it locked up the phone. We couldn't record anymore. I couldn't delete anything. Like, if you run out of storage because you're rolling live video, the idea of doing that on a set, like, that puts you like 2 hours behind. You're screwed. Like, you can't do that. That is not a thing that any normal person would do. If you shoot the occasional video clip on your phone and like maybe there's a green screen in it and you're like, hey, this would be better if it was less compressed. Sure, maybe. I have no idea what this is going to be for, though.
No. I like you said, I think it's just sort of like a feature checklist kind of thing, that kind of appeal.
They just dragged the codec package over onto the iOS simulator, and they're like, boom, and it solves. Easy.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it's just like people will be like, oh, wow, it can do this. And it's like, but can it? Should you? Should anyone? Should people? Mm-hmm. No.
Can you technically edit video on an iPad with, what's that app? LumaFusion? Is that still the one? Sure. Are you going to sync over 60 gigabytes worth of raw footage to cut yourself a commercial on an iPad? Probably not.
No. No, absolutely not.
Yeah. As an aside, like, I looked at the plates folder of the stuff we're working on, you know, right now, and it's 150 gigs. So it's like, sure, maybe someday in the future I could work on an iPad and do stuff. This this idea that iPads are eventually going to be fast enough to become like professional creative machines, I think it's going to be one of those things that we continue to say is 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line. And at some point, some innovation is going to come in and turn the iPad into a thin client for the cloud. And that's going to be the only way we're going to be able to do creative work on them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's an issue of the iPad being fast enough as much as it is an issue of dealing with file management.
The storage logistics, like how do the files get there? Where do they come from? How do you move them somewhere else? Like every bit of that is like a way bigger practical issue than whether or not an Apple Pencil on an iPad screen is a practical way to edit a video.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about problems with your Dropbox relative file paths?
Oh, sure. I'll just do what Dr. Drang does, and I'll write link code that finds the stuff in the iCloud Drive folder on my Mac so everything links correctly or whatever.
Ugh, God. No, thank you.
No, thank you. No, thank you. iCloud Drive is still just... Dropbox is broken, but it's broken in very predictable ways because it's still just a file system. iCloud Drive is just like, fuck it, your file name is a hash. Like, great, find it now.
Oh, man. Yeah, I have to say... I was looking for something in Pixelmator before, and it has a weird system on the iPhone where it's like, this is your on-device stuff, and it's like, okay, but some of my stuff is in iCloud, but I can't easily move the on-device stuff to iCloud inside the app, so I'd have to open up the Files app and kind of drag stuff around, and then maybe it would be in the right place, but is it going to change my date-modified stuff? I don't want to deal with any of that stuff right now. So I still have some stuff that is in iCloud in a Pixelmator folder, and I have stuff that is on device in a Pixelmator folder. And it's like, this is stupid. Like, why is it like this? Why are things like this? Like, who wants to have stuff in app-specific folders? I just feel like this hierarchy that they've established is abysmal.
I mean, yeah, aside from the occasional, I still think I primarily use Juxtaposer to make silly images of people on the internet. I mean, what do you do with your phone these days? I think I look at Twitter, I look at my email, I look at Slack, I look at TikTok, and occasionally YouTube, and that's about it. I don't need to do anything else on my phone.
Yeah, I mean, and podcasts.
Oh, yeah, sure, podcasts. Yeah. And music and stuff.
And Slack, and Teams.
No Teams.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
No, I don't.
Some people have it for the work.
See, there's another reason you should come work with me. I won't make you use Teams.
Thank you.
By the way, Slack's Huddle feature is actually really cool. So the Huddle is the thing that they stole from that Tandem. You remember that product Tandem where it's like you basically just turn on a chat in a room and people can join if they want or not, and you can like screen share and stuff. It's like a non demanding, like it's not like a call so much as like there's a room and you just turn it on and people can pop in and out. It's actually really useful for having conversations with people.
Okay.
I don't know if it's filtered down to the free tier of stuff yet. I don't even know if the free people are going to get it anytime soon, but it's pretty handy.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take your word for it. I have not used Slack for business, just for pleasure.
So much pleasure.
They seem to have some sort of bug that causes it to very slowly refresh every time I open it on iOS right now. So whatever.
I get it. It slows down to an absolute crawl and makes my phone really hot like once every 4 days, and I have to just force quit and then it's fine again.
Yeah, I don't. What do you do, Slack? Like, what could you possibly be doing? You're not updating anything in the background, because I know every time I open the app, it's like, oh no. Panic. Time to work. Time to act like we were doing stuff.
This is all Electron's fault.
Yeah.
No, my favorite thing is when I plug it in Amanda's car to go drive around, since it's plugged in to CarPlay, it thinks it's plugged in just to the power. And since I'm on the beta of Slack, Test Flight will update Slack like while I'm driving. So I get out of the car and I open my phone and it says Slack is now updated and ready to use. And like, this is a very opportune time for you to update my beta apps as well. I'm driving around in a car.
Yeah. Well, my...
So how many telephones did you buy, I guess, before we get off the topic?
Oh, none, because I'm going to not be here when it's released. So I can't do that.
Well, what does that mean? Oh, you're not going to be in your home?
Yes. That's what I meant by here.
Pre-order's on Friday.
I know, but the arrival date is sometime that I won't be here. So
when is the arrival date? I didn't even look at
that. It's supposed to be, I believe they said 24th to the 27th is going to be the initial wave.
That's not very helpful for me either, to be honest.
You got stuff you're doing?
I got stuff I'm doing.
Yeah. 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 So anyway, yeah.
Well, eventually, are you going to purchase a telephone?
I think so, because I'm on the 11 Pro, and while it's fine, the one area that it kind of sucks at right now is storage.
Where are you at? You're at a 128 or you're at a 64?
256.
256. Mm-hmm. I think I'm on a 256, aren't I? Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you telling me you filled your 256?
I think so. Last I checked.
Wow, that's impressive.
I mean, it's not impressive. It's just that I should delete more things, I guess. Yeah, I just have a lot of crap.
I think I'm sticking 256, even for the next one. Don't need it. Don't need that terabyte.
No, I mean, well, I'm not going to terabyte, but I'm going to get, you know, a bigger phone. I think that'll be good for me. The phone, otherwise, is plenty fast at what it does. As we discussed, I'm not really doing anything with it that's that demanding.
Oh, but you're gonna get flat sides now. You need the flat sides, so that's nice.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I might miss the curvy sides.
You won't. It won't squirt out of your hand nearly as often. It's great.
Well, I also keep my phone in a case, so I have to, you know, deal with the ramifications of buying a new case.
Oh God, the humanity.
Yeah, yeah. Although this one has little like chunks of the silicone that have like popped off somehow. It's unfortunate.
Which color case do you have? Do you have a purple one or something?
No, it's not purple. I had a purple with the iPhone 6. This one's the midnight blue. I believe is the color.
I guess it's not worth asking you what color phone you're gonna get because it doesn't matter.
I'm gonna get the black one. I'm gonna put it in a case. What do you care?
Ugh, so boring.
But it's gonna be in a case. You won't see whatever color it is. It's gonna be in a case. A case.
Makes me sad.
Yeah. What are you buying, Dan?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll probably buy another gold phone, even though I don't want a gold phone. I want a cool, colorful phone, but they don't sell colorful phones for the pro phones.
No, but they...
I thought the Starlight looked kind of cool, actually.
Yeah. They do have that green, too. So you get the green.
Well, the pro has the baby blue.
Oh, right. It's the watch that has the green. Never mind.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna get a new watch too, because I only buy the watches where there's like a major hardware change. I had the Series 0, and then I got a 4 when it went to the bigger screen size, and now the screen is ever so slightly larger, so got to get in on that. There really wasn't much else to the watch, was there? I mean, I guess blood oxygen happened last year, but there was nothing really else to happen to it, was there?
No, but I'm coming. I've got a 3.
You need a new watch for sure.
Yeah, because... I swear to God, if this thing tells me that there's not enough space to do an update again, piece of garbage. I cannot.
Are you gonna get one of these little rubber Macintosh chargers like I have on my desk so you can put your old watch in it?
No, I will just not wear it. But I cannot believe that they are still selling the Series 3 Apple Watch in the year 2021 and into 2022.
Yeah. I mean, people's aunts hear about an Apple Watch and they really want to go get an Apple Watch. They go to the store and they just want the cheap one. So somebody's got to sell them a cheap one.
What is this, an Apple store? What is this, an Apple Watch for ants? Anyway, so
an Apple Watch storage size for ants. That's for sure.
Oh yeah. I just imagine all those ants out there going, "Why isn't it upgrading? Why does it say it doesn't have enough storage? I don't have any stuff on it. What am I supposed to do?"
I mean, those are also the people that have like the little one badge on their system, their settings app that says you have an update for like 7 months. And they're like, "Well, how do I make that go away?" Well, you update the software. Where's that? You click on it and you follow the badges and you go to the software update.
Maybe I should go in Big Sur, I guess, before they release the new one that I don't want.
Oh, you're still on Catalina?
Yeah.
I've been Big Sur for a little while now. It's pretty good. It hasn't ruined anything for me.
Yeah, I'm mainly concerned with
your call recording apps that are broken already?
No, the VPN stuff for my actual job. I need to make sure that all that stuff works. I think it's supposed to, theoretically, because no one's complained or said not to upgrade in a year, but nobody gave any sort of like official thumbs up. So I don't know.
You know who wouldn't make you work on a weird VPN on your home computer?
Is it you, Dan?
It's me.
Yeah,
I would just require you to spend thousands of dollars on software.
No, yeah, I just spend thousands of dollars on software, manage file links, and
have to manage the links. That's my job.
And do it all in Dropbox, buggy Dropbox, and then after all that, not have a render farm, just batch it all local.
Well, you know, if I had a render solution that worked, I would use it. I just don't have one yet.
Yeah, well, one idea. Buy a Mac Mini, be cheaper than paying by the hour, and offload it to that.
Did I tell you the last thing? That one service that said coming soon or whatever with the GitHub links or whatever.
Yeah.
They're like, are you up against the deadline? We can probably write you something by next week that'll do this.
Yeah, you told me that.
Great, I appreciate that. Thank you. I feel very secure about my deadline at this point.
I'll probably
try the expensive one that supposedly works already, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing I like more than being up against a deadline and relying on software someone whipped up for me, a bespoke custom render farm script. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Work is silly. It's hot in here. We're also running low on bottled water, so I've been drinking a beer. So I'm certainly I'm like melting into my chair here.
Oh yeah,
I have a strawberry rhubarb flavored beer.
Oh, I'm assuming this is a sour.
So a sour ale of some sort. Mm-hmm. Is Great Divide the brand? I don't even know. It's got flamingos on it. It's kind of cool.
Flamingos are good. Any
creative drinks over there?
No. I mean, I just had a Boulevardier, so you know, pretty on brand.
It's a good drink.
Have you ever had a Boulevardier?
Dinner? I have, yes. Did you have that with dinner, or do you have that like during the show?
Both. Just nursing the drink.
I forget. That one is Manhattan adjacent, or what is that one? That one's very similar to something else, but...
It's a Negroni, but with that's bourbon. The one. Yeah. Instead of gin. But you get a... You get your bourbon, your Campari, and your sweet vermouth. And I go a little easy on the Campari because it's a little strong for the bitterness.
Yeah, you're not much of a Campari person, are you? Although, which is weird because Aperol is not that different, and you like Aperol.
They're both bitter, but I would say Campari is much more bitter than Aperol is. But I thought you were going to say
just like us.
They were going to say it was ironic because I'm bitter. Guess that was a missed opportunity.
No, you've been very unbitter on this show. Maybe it's just the nostalgia of not having been on a microphone to talk about silly technology in a while.
Yeah, it's because I like talking to you so much. That's why.
And we never speak. Well, we don't actually use our voices.
No.
But
that makes it sound super weird.
We communicate via text in a box frequently because again, you are the ghost supervisor behind the supervisor who answers most of the questions.
The puppet master.
The true puppet. You are the Palpatine to my Snoke.
What I'm afraid of is somebody, you'll like introduce me to someone and be like, oh yeah, this is Joe. He's who I talk to about all the stuff, and we do the things, and then they're like, oh god, are you why we have this broken system? And I'll be like, no, it's not my fault. Dan did it.
Well, it's kind of your fault because you're like, that's a terrible system. I don't have time to help you fix it. Bye. And then I'm like, well, system, you know.
When you contact me during business hours and ask me to like make something for you or test something on a Nuke install or whatever, like that's not happening.
Business hours, like you're a laundromat or something.
No, but I'm like doing stuff.
I know.
Yeah.
I kid, but one of these days, I will wear you down and make you work with me.
Okay. This is one way to have a nefarious plan.
it makes it easier to like not like moonlight and chat with my friends in the side chat if they just become part of the job, and then, you know, it's all just a work sanctioned conversation.
Yeah, that I could just loathe you because of work. So it'd be great. Yeah,
it's not me. I didn't create the work. I'm just, you know, I'm the helper helping get through the work.
You're the facilitator. You facilitate the work.
I facilitate. Yes.
Yes.
I don't honestly at this point, I don't even know what I could be dreaming right now. I might be hallucinating this entire podcast.
That could be. And on that note of hallucination, we should probably end.
Yeah, it's warm in here.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly.
Well, enjoy. Go stare at the sun tomorrow some more for warmth.
Yeah, I get to leave the house tomorrow, actually, for some things I have to do.
It's exciting.
Kind of. It's going to be hot. It's going to be
oh, goddamn,
103 still. What?
I meant to hit the mark. End.
Did you stop recording?
I stopped recording, but I started it again. But now I have two recordings. I didn't want to have two recordings. I just wanted one recording. This was going so well.
Was it?
It was going fine. Now it's not fine.
It's fine. You just put the two side by side.
Mm. All right.
Oh, sorry. We didn't even talk about Dune.
Desert planet. Oh, yeah. I mean, speaking of cinematic mode.
Fuck. Oh, that was the dumbest thing. Maybe we'll save that for another time. You want to save that for the after show listeners here?
No, let's just do it right now. I'm going to put a marker. Maybe we can add this to the end.
Sure.
So
yeah. So, but before we officially wrap up, we have to talk about that. Was a Hollywood Reporter article about the Dune cinematic process?
Yeah. A friend of the show, Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, Todd Vaziri, he had pointed us towards an article in the Hollywood Reporter where they interviewed Greg Fraser, who is the director of photography, the cinematographer for Dune, by Denis Villeneuve. And it is a much sought-after, long-awaited kind of for multiple reasons, for wanting to see the disaster have finally happened, and other people were just kind of excited about it, I guess. They talked to him about what they did in terms of the process of what they were shooting and stuff. And
it's very important to get the look right on Dune, because it's a very famous, cinematic, highly artistic film.
Well, I mean, can be. It's based on a book, Dan. I mean, he's not remaking the David Lynch movie. He's making a movie based on the book.
Yeah, sure, but
yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
It's a thing. People have expectations.
Yeah. But it really, I think, threw me I would say more than a handful of people for a loop. There was a mention that the film was shot on Alexa LF cameras. Those are the large format sensor cameras, which you see used very infrequently on very expensive, very big blockbuster spectacles.
Well, just to clarify, it's not the 65 millimeter. It's the large format that's slightly larger than 35, but it's not the massive guys.
Yeah, not the Alexa 65, the Alexa LF large format.
Yes.
So they shot on that, and it's supposed to give you, you know, more spectacle, more oomph. But Greg Fraser, God bless him, he decided that he would like to photograph that output on film and then scan the film emulsion back in after it had been developed. So you are taking something that is, I wouldn't say like the most razor sharp, but very sharp, very crisp, yeah, very clear.
Very high quality image.
Very high quality image. You are running it through a mimeograph, and then you are doing the rest of your movie making process afterwards. And it blows my mind that he wanted to do that, and that Denis was like, yeah, sure. If that's what you really feel passionately about, let's go do it. I mean, I guess it's good if you're a collaborator with the director, that you get to have some sway over the project and how it gets made. But what? Why are we doing this?
It's basically a fancy version of taking a high quality picture and projecting it on a screen and then pointing a different camera at it.
Yeah, I mean, just put a diffusion filter on it or something. Like, God, Christ. What's the point?
For people out there wondering what the potential technical and artistic reasons might be for doing something like this, the answer is that there are none. This is stupid. This is wasteful. This is unnecessary.
Yeah.
It's dumb and lazy and wasteful.
I will say, we have not examined what the film looks like projected in a movie theater. We have just seen the trailers that are online. So in terms of the generation loss of what the film is going through in that process, we can't really examine, because there are plenty of films that are shot on 35 millimeter that look fine on your smartphone. But
do you think that was the motivation? They were primarily worried about a lot of people watching this in their homes and it being like too sharp and looking bad?
No, I don't think that was the concern at all, because Denny would really, he thinks that it is imperative. I forget the exact words he used, but he kind of made like a little jokey analogy where he really strongly believes in seeing this movie in a movie theater, and that you would be doing yourself in the film a disservice by watching it at home.
Oh, yeah. There was also that line where it's basically a mix of extremely wide angle shots and tight intercut close ups to sort of create that massive feel, and to be honest, that sounds exhausting, but I guess we'll see when it actually comes out.
Yeah, I mean, the trailer is not indicative of how the editing of the actual film is and like what it's going to feel like. I can say that it is most likely going to be a little on the lingering side, perhaps.
Yeah, you didn't want to go with pretentious, but yeah.
I mean, I liked watching Blade Runner 2049. It is a flawed movie, but I thought it was fun. It was a sumptuous cinematic experience, and you get the atmosphere and a vibe and the whole thing. It's not a good movie to on like really serious examination, but it is a fun experience to sit and watch. This movie, I expect, will be mostly the same, because, Dan, I don't know if you know this, but this movie is only the first half of the book.
I did not know that. Is the original movie both sides of the book?
Yes.
Huh.
Otherwise known as the full book. But yes, it is both sides of the book. This is just half, and then there's going to be another movie that will be the other half. But they haven't made the other movie yet. And whether or not that gets made is largely contingent upon the success of this movie.
Oh, so it's like Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Mm-hmm. And this is
going to be a big, expensive flop, and they're just not going to make the other one.
Yeah. I forget what the exact runtime is. I believe it is 2 hours and 35 minutes for half of a book.
Boy.
So I want you to think about the David Lynch movie. Divide it in half, and then stretch that out to be 2 hours and 35 minutes.
I honestly could not tell you what happens halfway through that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I want to watch the movie. I think that I am in the target audience for the movie, but goodness gracious, there's just a lot of decisions being made that, why did you do that? Do you like hate the idea of being commercially successful? I don't understand.
Whatever comes out of it, I think we can all agree that it's very stupid to use a beautiful brand new camera and send it out to film and then scan that back in, for just a million reasons, especially because it's a huge effects film. And it's just like, I just feel like adding gate weave to all of my shots to make it harder on the effects people.
God, I mean, I have to imagine that they stabilized and took that out when they scanned the film back in. But just like trying to make the effects sit in with that, it's just like, oh yeah, so this is like this scanned thing that was the sensor noise or grain, maybe, that is this thing here and this, God. Just
maybe Steve Yedlin wrote them a 3D cubelet that screwed it up in a new interesting way.
Yeah, the ultimate cinematic mode. Yeah. But, so Dan,
mm-hmm.
To wrap it up on one last thing before we actually finally say goodbye this time.
Oh, sure.
I feel like
go ahead.
We would be remiss if we didn't talk about the most pretentious one of them all. Do you know what I'm referring to?
I don't. What are you talking about?
Christopher Nolan is making a film about Oppenheimer, one of the fathers of the atomic bomb, and it's going to be a World War II movie. And he got really super famously mad at Warner Brothers, as we discussed in our Tenet episode.
Yes.
And he did not want to go with them. So he took his toys and went to his house in the Hollywood Hills and told all the other studio heads that they had to drive up and read a script. And he wound up being between Apple, Paramount, before Jim Giannopoulos was fired by surprise last week, and Universal, and what was the other one? Sony. And he tried to get a deal out of all of them, where the thing is that he has a exclusivity window for the film that before it goes on streaming, but he also has blackout dates for 3 weeks before and after the release of his film, where the studio will not release any other competing film at the same time. Nothing, absolutely nothing. All attention will be paid to him. There is a requirement about there being a super large marketing budget just for him, just for his movie. It is quite a maneuver.
Did somebody buy the film? I missed all of this, by the way.
Oh yeah, well let me send you the link. Universal did. They agreed. They agreed to finance this surefire success. And as we've talked about many times, I find Christopher Nolan to be the epitome of the second worst of the auteur directors. And when it comes to their inflated ego and sense of self. So I am curious to see how this pans out for Universal and for Nolan. But
he sure thinks a lot of himself for a guy whose last movie was not that great.
No. And the Hollywood Reporter makes sure to mention that Tenet's mediocre performance and reviews. And yeah, we talked about it. It wasn't that good. It wasn't that good of a movie. But whatever. He's going to get a ton of money to make this thing.
$100 million budget is not a small budget, but it's also kind of small for him comparatively. Maybe
it is smaller than what he's used to, but he is making a movie about a guy who makes the atomic bomb. So it doesn't. While it's a World War II set thing, I don't believe there are the sweeping storming of the beaches and stuff that require as much labor.
I was gonna say, are they gonna get into the splitting of the atom so he can do something silly with time, making it go sideways or whatever?
No, I'm sure he's gonna actually get the only camera and lens combination that can record an atom being split, and he's going to shoot that practically and then edit the film by splicing it manually. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's going to shut down the CERN super collider so he can shoot inside of it.
Yeah, he's I don't know. He's just a weird guy. He's just a super weird guy.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I thought that was worth mentioning when we were talking about how weird the Dune stuff is.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I missed all this, and any news about Christopher Nolan is always going to be weird. But that's I think it's funny that he even let Apple come to the conversation, because Apple letting him do that is insane. That's not where they are right now with their things.
Well, it would be easy for them to give him that 3 week before and after exclusivity window because they don't have anything else they're releasing.
Oh, sure. But the idea is it's like it can't be on their streaming platforms for a certain period of time. And
right.
Like what do they care?
Yeah. I don't know. It's very interesting. So I don't know, but probably a good fit for Universal, I guess. So
good luck to him, yeah. I guess. Whatever.
Yeah. And
make one that makes sense, Chris.
As I mentioned with the surprise firing of Jim, the head of Paramount, Sherry Redstone is the daughter of Sumner Redstone, who died and was the kind of absent, really weird but super involved micromanager of Paramount and Viacom. So she runs it, sort of, as the owner, majority owner. She axed Jim Giannopoulos because she had brought him in personally to help fix Paramount after the disastrous CEOs that came before him. And he fixed it by mainly selling off stuff that was in Paramount's production pipeline that he didn't think would be profitable in a movie theater. And then he did some other stuff and he returned Paramount to profitability, although not like acclaim. Sherry's a little upset because Sherry wants to grow Paramount Plus, the streaming service, like the other guys are growing their streaming services. So she wants to release the movies that they've been holding back on, like Top Gun and your Mission Impossibles and all of the other stuff, direct to streaming day and date, like Warner's is doing with HBO Max. And she decided to get rid of the CEO and replace him with somebody who would be more compliant with that need. So you're going to see a bunch of stories probably fairly shortly about everybody renegotiating their contracts with Paramount for their releases. And maybe you're going to wind up with a day and date release of Top Gun on your TV. Who knows?
Has there been any progress on the Black Widow lawsuit yet?
No, not that I've seen.
I'm curious to see how that shakes out. I feel like she'll win because she's not wrong, but also, you know, it's opening a can of worms for these other people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a sticky situation to be like, oh, yeah, the way you were expecting to get money, we changed it.
but also, yeah. So did the rest of the world forever, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, I would be curious to find out how Tom Cruise is going to navigate that situation with Paramount, because they've delayed the movies twice now, or no, three times now. So
at least Bond finally set a date, but that's still going to be a pain in the ass because stuff is still screwed up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's literally because if MGM doesn't release it, they're going to go under. But they may go under anyways.
Well, in what, 30 years, somebody will have a podcast about all the movies that led to the dying of MGM, and then they'll make some cool hoodies with the MGM logo, but turned into the podcast logo.
Yeah. All right. On the note of the death of cinema.
The death of cinema. Screw it. Cinematic mode is now an iPhone filter.
Yeah. We're done.
Yeah.
For real this time, and not just for play.
Yeah.